You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the official, I was told it's an official Miami Dolphins podcast network, Seth Levitt with DJ Preach, and of course, the main man, Juice, OJ McDuffie. How you feeling, man?
What's up, Big Seth?
Look, I'm pumped up because we worked hard for this one. You know, our guest was known for being elusive. He was hard to bring down on the field.
That's right.
And he made us work. He made us work for this one here, but I could not be more excited than to have Wes Welker diving in the tank. Wes, how you feeling, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I apologize for that. You know, it's a tough deal. Like I see here, like,
I love it. I love
away
it.
From it, man.
I love it, man.
I can't get away from it. It's just like kids, work, job, you name it. Like, okay, go in the other room.
All good. Well, thrilled to have you here, man. I talk about this on the show a lot. That there's certainly the guys that I worked with. And then there's guys that year that I left, there's a 2004-2005 crew where I almost forget sometimes that I didn't actually work with some of you guys. But I, you know, because of JT and we were starting a foundation and how guys like yourself were so supportive of the work and the fact that, and I say this again all the time, I had more reign of that facility once I left than I did when I worked there.
You know, right,
I had
right.
my shoulder giving me a hard time.
That works, right?
It is really funny how it works, but Wes was always so good, Juice, to, you know, he was so supportive of anything that we were doing. And so I do feel like I know Wes pretty well, but in prepping for today, the thing that caught me off guard, and I had no idea about this, is that you are an official citizen of the Cherokee Nation. And I had to ask.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's so right.
How did I not know that?
I don't know. I guess it's something that, you know, like isn't really announced out there or anything like that. But yeah, I grew up in Oklahoma and, you know, my mom's side of the family are part of the Cherokee Nation and, you know, proud of it and everything like that. And, but yeah, it's just something that doesn't really get thrown out there all that much.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is awesome right there, man. So this has been part of your heritage for me, obviously, since the beginning of time. So we're just now learning about it, though.
Yeah. It was always kind of interesting because it was just like, you know, I got card carrying Indian and I never really knew what that meant or anything. It was just, you know, it's basically like I didn't even notice really now you're seeing like people actually getting benefits from it. More like my brother would sign up for stuff or, you know, computers for the kids and different things like that. That, I mean, that never really happened for us growing up or anything, right. But I feel like it's kind of evolving now and like,
sure.
People are able to kind of get benefits from, you know, the Cherokee Nation as far as that goes.
Right. As they should.
Sure,
right.
But I was fascinated. And then I watched this piece I found on YouTube. It was an interview you did with, I guess it was a Cherokee television show. And right. And one of the things you said was, you know, I think that I got some of my toughness from, you know, my DNA from you know, my Cherokee heritage.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you read all the stories of, you know, the warriors back in the day and all that stuff. Like it was amazing, you know, Trail of Tears, all that stuff. Like, you know, the resilience and toughness and, you know, what they kind of had to go through and everything like that was. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable, man. So you talked a little bit about growing up, you know, in Oklahoma City, where in high school you had like ridiculous numbers. I mean, 53 rushing touchdowns, 27 receiving touchdowns, 22 picks, 3 of them went back for 6. I'm looking at all these numbers, like 7 punt returns with touchdowns. You even kicked field goals, and we know we'll talk about that a little bit later. We know about your kicking game as well, man. Just ridiculous numbers, man. So, and you're also Oklahoma State Player of the Year in 99. You didn't get any scholarship offers from all that, man?
Not when signing day came.
Right.
It was a week after signing day there with Texas Tech. But yeah, no, I thought I deserved one. I mm-hmm. thought I was going to get
Sounds
one.
Like you did.
Like it was like, trust me. No, it was like punching. I was like, I remember Tulsa turned me down. And
Tulsa.
After I heard that, like I punched a hole in the wall. Like, I was just like, what more do I have to do?
Right.
You know, to be able to earn a spot. And it's like, I don't know, you know, and I get their position, especially being on the football side now, because it is, you know, it's a height, weight, speed type of game, you know, and odds are those guys are going to make it. But if you really look at the film and you see guys like, all right, you know, production at some point has to play a part.
It's got to be a production game, right?
Like, it's, right. I mean, you would think, you know, I think there's a point there. But, yeah, trying to find those guys that have the ability and different things like that, like, it's easier said than done, you know. And I think there are guys that get lazy with it of, like, well, all this says that he should be able to do it,
right?
You know, and so it's like,
hey, at least I'll cover my ass, right? I got the guy. Well, he's 6'3" and runs a foot. Yeah.
Sometimes schools got to take a flyer on a football player, though.
Yeah. Like, bottom line, that's what I was about to ask you.
Football players,
can they play football? Can they? Excuse my friends, fucking play football, man.
No question.
And that's it, man. And I'm sure some of that is what's been a driving force in how successful you've been and how you go out there and you play the game. You know, I mean, a little bit of an edge, a little bit of chip on your shoulder, you know, being doubted at, you know, after all these great numbers in high school, and then you get to Texas Tech and light it up. You know, that had to put a little bit of a chip on your shoulders. I got the same thing, and lack of speed and all that stuff. But so I played on the edge a little bit.
You know? And it really hurt him in the draft, Wes. It really hurt him in the draft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, it took a little time. Shut up, Seth.
Yeah.
Come on.
No, but it is true, man. Like, it is. Like, and the way I always looked at it is like, well, shoot, these guys are way faster than me. You know, I'm a 4.6 guy. Well, I better be able to run 4.6, like, when I am dead dog tired. I better be able, like, it's got to, I think you see so many 4.3, 4.4 guys that sit there and say, like, well, I'm 4.3, 4.4. I really don't have to run that hard. You know, like, it's in there whenever I need it. And it's like, well, why do that? Like, why not just play 4.3, 4.4 all the time? Like, you can be that much better than everybody else. Like, what are you doing? And it's like, well, I'm saving myself from when I, and it's like, dude, you just don't get it, do you? You just don't.
Hey, Wes, it's got to drive you crazy too, Wes, when guys take themselves out of the game. They couldn't get me out of the game. They couldn't, you know, guys want to take a break, take a blow. No, we work for this so you can play 70 plays a game. You know what I mean?
No, trust me. Like, it's always so funny whenever, I'm doing subs during the game and Debo's tired or Brandon, you know, IU's tired or whatever. And it's like, you know, Kyle's yelling at me, get him out of the game. Are you not subbing him? Are you? I'm like, hey, I was, you know, my first year of really doing it, first couple of games, like, I'm like, I thought, like, the best players played. Like, yeah, I don't remember, like, coming, like, unless, like, they change personnels or whatever, like, you go until, like, you need one yourself. Like,
right. Like
if I needed one, yeah, I'm going to let the coach know. But, like, otherwise, like, you go. So that's been a little bit of a learning curve for me on it, for sure.
I bet. Well, they say that, right? For all the guys who did it and did it really well, that transition to coaching is tough because, you know, you're expecting people to do some things that you did, you know, and the way you did them.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's what I've heard. I mean, I don't know a damn thing about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you set an expectation of what you think it's going to be. And if it's not that, then you let them know, you know, and you just keep on harping on it over and over again. And eventually they'll figure it out, and if they don't, like, that's
somebody else,
that's their loss. All right, they can, you know, find a way to make a living a different way.
Right.
that's exactly right. So look, as Juice kind of alluded to, you know, it didn't stop in high school. It wasn't a fluke. Got to Texas Tech, friggin' set NCAA records for punt return TDs and continued to ball out, and we could go through that whole stat line as well. But this is the Fish Tank. And so what I'd rather talk about at Texas Tech, my real question is, even though he had been gone for 4 or 5 years, I want to know how big the legend of Zach Thomas was when you got to Lubbock. Like, what on and off the field? I remember you talking about a cowbell story that, you know, when you got there. But I want to hear about the legend of Zach. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's so funny because Zach had been out of Texas Tech when I got there for probably like 5 or 6 years, I'd say, something like that. And it felt like a really long time for me. at the time. It was right. like, oh, well, he's never coming back to games. And I remember he came to like one of our games against Ole Miss, like I think my junior or senior year. And, you know, that was, let me get him out of here.
Dak, he's doing a hell of a job. Dude.
Get out. Out. I'm going to say get out. You get out. All right, go over here and live, Patty.
Hey, you said if you can't get it right, you're gonna find another way okay. to live.
That's right. See you later.
I love it.
That was impressive, Wes.
I love
it. Oh, dude, I'm telling you, he just, that kid, he's funny. He like he's a funny dude, but he's a lot of work.
Too funny.
Anyways, where was I? Sorry,
we were talking about Zach. We were talking about Zach okay, being gone, and but yeah.
Right. But it was, he was almost like a myth or a legend because you never really saw him or anything, but like you watched him play on Sundays and, you know, you knew all the stuff that he did there at Texas Tech and watching highlights, like before he played A&M, you know, the coaches put together a video and showing Zach intercepting the ball, win the game, running back for a touchdown, ringing the bell, doing all that stuff. And
yeah, tell them about the bell, right? Not everybody knows about the bell. You know, we hear get your guns up. We know about the Red Raiders getting your guns up. But tell them about the bell.
Yeah, so after he scored touchdowns or whatever, you know, there's a guy down there usually, you know, ringing the bell. And, you know, it's part of the tradition and different things like that, along with the tortillas being thrown at the other team and, you know, different things like that.
Do it different.
It's
love
a cool, cool place to play college ball. There's no doubt about it.
Oh man, it sounds like it, man. You ring that bell quite a few times yourself, though. Do you ever go over there? There's a guy that actually does it. Are you allowed to do it as a player sometimes?
I think I remember Zach doing it after he like intercepted that pass and did it himself. I think that's the only guy that's ever really done it.
You know, had the ball. I
know. Only, that's some Zach shit too, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Well, he was really good at it. You know, lots of practice, I guess.
Well, the true test of those guys and the legend of Zach Thomas would happen after 4 or 5 years after he left, because those all the guys that had played with him would no longer be with the team. So when that legend kind of carries on to those guys who never played with him, that's true testament.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, because I'm trying to think. I don't think anybody, whenever I first got there, was ever with Zach. So nobody, you know, it just kind of became like the myth, the man, the legend, you know.
And then you get to Miami, you're like, this is it.
Yeah. Well, it was awesome, though.
This was all the hype?
Like, I had, like, Zach Thomas in there recruiting me after I got cut there from the Chargers. And,
really?
That's Dave awesome. Wonstadt put him on the phone, and he's like, yeah, you should come here, get some Red Raiders around, like that, you know, just kind of the Texas swing. And anyways, I get there, and all that stuff. He actually let me borrow his car.
Did he?
For a few days, for like a week or whatever. Like, I'm sitting around, like, driving around a BMW 7 Series, and I'm like, all right, that's, this is definitely the nicest car I've ever ridden around. And, like, I'm like, yeah,
what happened
sure
to his humble roots?
Cool with me driving this? Like, he's like, yeah, man, it's cool, you know.
That's great.
That's pretty. Yeah. You know, let's talk about a little bit about that, Wes. You know, we talk a little bit about the Dolphin part of this whole thing you're just talking about. After college, you talked about the numbers. We talked about high school, the numbers. And still, once again, you kind of get disrespected, you know, coming out of college with these great numbers, you know, no invite to the combine, undrafted. You know, you talked about a little bit about getting cut by the Chargers. And then how exactly did you end up here in Miami? I mean, you're talking a little bit about Juan's. What was his sales pitch? I know Zach was part of that deal, but, you know, what else did Juan say to get you to come here? And how'd you end up in Miami?
Well, it's a couple different things, but basically I was on a flight to Tampa. I was going to go to Tampa. And anyways, I guess Miami finally saw the waiver wire or something. I don't know what the deal was, but they hit us up and they had just signed a returner off the waiver wire the week before, because I had made the team there in San Diego. And so I played the first week there. Miami had just signed a returner for that week one. And anyways, they cut me after that. And they wanted me to be on practice squad there in San Diego. And I was kind of pissed off because, like, I did enough during this preseason to earn a spot.
Right.
And so I was like, all right, well, I need to, you know, and Tim Dwight was there. Like they had like, they had a good team that year. And so anyways, I was like, all right, I need to move on somewhere else and get a, you know, a place that's a better opportunity. And anyways, was going to go to Tampa. Then Miami called and kind of like everything that happened there happened. And I was going to be on practice squad, but they're going to pay me like $2,000 more to be on their practice squad. And I'm like,
so it was a practice squad call. It wasn't even a it wasn't a active roster call. It was a practice squad call.
It was practice squad. Wow. Yeah, but it was just a better opportunity, like as far as what they had is, you know, just signing that returner and everything like that. So, you know, I ended up going there and, you know, the returner had a bad game or whatever. And the next week I'm up.
Yeah.
And so it's it just happened really quick like that.
Yeah, before we move on with that part, though, Wes, you know, we talked to a couple guys, and I mean, we always have guys on the show that always have different things to say. They were talking about the helmet you showed up with, though. They said you showed up with a helmet that it was so big that they started calling you Lord Farquaad.
Trust me, they were crushing me on it. I'm like, I mean, you know, you go into the large, you know, the equipment room, and they sit there and they put you on with the helmet. Well, they put all these different helmets on. Well, I just go by what feels good on. I'm not sitting there looking in the mirror.
Not in front of the
I'm like, okay, this thing forms to my head well. Like, I don't sit there and say, like, all right, this is I look like Spaceballs over here. You know, like it's just like, all right, yeah, this one's the most comfortable one. And then they say, I go out there and people are just killing me. Like, I'm just like, I'm sitting there like the new guy. Like,
you know, new guy, like
more practice, and like, yeah, that thing was later finding out I probably needed that thing, so
right,
That's probably,
yeah, I feel you.
But Randy McMichael, yeah, so I reached out, and Randy Mac was like, ask him about that damn helmet. I go, what's wrong? Yeah. It was so fucking big. I guess it was so the intel juice is it was the Revolution helmet. It was like the first year of that. And, you know, Tony was on the cutting edge of, to his credit, of concussion research and what have you. And he really was pushing this helmet. But, man, especially at your position, Wes, you know, wideouts have a tendency, as you know, coaching them, and as Juice might know from, well, yeah, you know, some divas up in there, right? And, you know, how do they look in this? Man, they talked about that helmet. So
No, I know, man. Trust me. I know. I felt like, remember the guy from the 49ers? He had like a helmet on top of
top
helmet.
Of helmet,
right, right. Yeah, you know, like that's what it. That, it was just like they melded it all together and made this big old thing.
Really goes back to the Don Beebe days, right? In Buffalo, they called him like Gazoo, whatever.
Yeah.
Now, did you stick with the helmet? Wow. Or did you, like after a few practices, you're like, Tony, I need something else.
I feel like I switched it because if I look at the one upstairs, I end up going with like the old school, like, you know, barely any padding. Like I put it on now and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I wore this.
Isn't that
crazy? Like it's pretty wild just to see like the Tech one to the Miami one to New England and Denver and kind of the evolution of it.
Yeah, you know, it's wild. But you know, that's that locker room is not for the faint of heart, man. So.
Oh man, yeah, no, trust me, man. They're get on you quick.
That is
brutal.
On you quick.
The locker room, the plane, the hotel, everything is.
But at least you didn't have to wear the helmet on the plane.
Yeah, you know?
It's the best part of ball, man. Best part, no doubt.
And Drew, they said, you know, this was like early practice, so you know they were maybe just in shells or even just helmets with no shoulder pads.
It makes it even worse.
Yeah, way worse.
I love it.
Yeah. And not to mention, Wes and I aren't the biggest guys, so big guys with little guys with big helmets, man, really like. It pops, right? Little top head.
No.
Yeah, I think
sure.
Tony was trying to get back at her. Talking about little guys, right? Tony is sitting there. Like, we're going to get his ass.
Too funny.
So, look, 2004, as you kind of alluded to, was a difficult year for this franchise. You know, Coach Wanstead didn't make it through the season. We all know what happened with Ricky and what have you. But for you, it was this, hell yeah, I can play at this level season.
Right.
And so what's so mind-boggling, and Juice alluded to it earlier, you know, with how versatile you were in high school, was a few weeks into the season, Alindo starts limping around with a sore calf. You know, which I know, you talk about guys getting killed. Don't let a kicker be hurt.
No doubt.
Nobody wants to see that shit. But so Lindo's limping around, and you tell them that you kicked, like, did you go up and say, hey, I kicked 35 field goals in high school? How did this happen where the special teams coach knows you can kick and they decide to actually give you a shot?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly how it happened. But, you know, I played soccer my whole life. So, you know, and I kicked in high school. I actually kicked a couple times there at Tech. Actually missed an extra point. Bad deal. But point, man. It was like the game was out of hand and I had Coach Leach let me go out there and kick one and actually ended up missing it. But anyways, I don't know if they kind of knew from that or whatever, but during the week, like Lindo's calf was a little sore and stuff. And so I was like, hey, if you want to give me a kick or whatever, I can kick. And so anyways, sure enough, pregame, you know, Lindo pulls his calf and, you know, I'm out there kicking right before the game and, you know, kicking, whatever. And people are always like, I mean, weren't you nervous? And I'm like, if they fire me for missing a field goal or point, like, that's bullshit, man.
That's right. That is complete bullshit. I worked my ass off my whole life to get here.
I'm tired to do this.
Right.
You know? Get tired because you can't kick.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
I do remember every team, though, Big Seth had – every team has, you know, usually goes the kicker, then your punter. You only have those two guys on staff. But then they look at the rest of the team and have like a field goal competition in case something goes down like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So to have Wes already in the stable, I mean, that's outstanding there. Because most of the times you got to find like, and Wes, I'll tell you one story about me. I missed a field goal, 35-yard field goal, my junior year in high school. And we lost by 2 points. And we missed going to the state championship. Because of my miss, fired on the spot right there. I got fired as a kicker on the spot, bro. Well, at least you were consistently good with it, bro.
Talk about that. Look, I mean, okay, yeah, he can kick and it's fun, and some guys are serviceable, so you can get through the game and maybe you call for, you know, the 2-point conversion. So he goes on to have he returns 5 punts. We know he's really good at that. He returns 5 kickoffs. We know he's really good at that. Kicks off 3 times, you get a tackle, right? Kicks off and gets the tackle in the kickoff, makes an extra point and a 29-yard field goal. Wes, that's a hell of a day, man.
Yeah, no, it was. No, it was definitely kind of a crazy day. I didn't think it would blow up as much as it did at the time. I was just kind of like, and it's kind of funny because that was like my first and only player of the week in my whole career.
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah.
How is that even possible?
Yeah.
You have like 7,000, you know, all
everything
these
catches. 10,000 yards, yeah.
I don't know, man. Goodell doesn't like me. That's all I think. I don't know.
Some people could argue. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
That's your only – wow. So, yeah, you got special teams player of the week. And it's legendary down here. I guess it's kind of laughable now when we see what you did the rest of your career that's something we hang on to. But that's well, that's what 2004 was like.
Right.
Yeah, just a wild season. There's no way we couldn't ask about it.
Yeah, and that's like old school throwback guys, you know? Back in the day, one guy did everything for a team. Kick, punt, quarterback, running back, you know? That's what Wes was in a new era, man. That's outstanding. I remember that game, bro. It was, you know, and Seth knows it, and Preach knows, man. After I retired, I was the biggest Dolphin fan and definitely one of your biggest fans, bro. And it's always fun to go out there and watch you work, especially working in the slot, you know what I mean? Working outside. And that's what I want to talk about. You know, Seth likes to talk about the return game, your kicks and the kickoff and the field goals. I like to talk about the wide receiver position and catching footballs, man.
Why it took this long,
yeah.
Juice?
Yeah, so yeah, I know, right? It did take a little time for me to get into it. So in 2004, you were strictly, you know, a return guy, but in 2005, man, you begin to work into the rotation of the offense. Talk about the wideouts in that room a little bit. And do you have any like funny stories or, you know, have you learned from those guys a little bit, anything on off the field? Because I heard they changed your life when they took you down to South Beach for the first
time. Chris,
South Beach will do that.
South Beach, like that's one way for a 20-year-old to be like christened on, you know, on how things are down there and down in South Beach. But no, absolutely. You know, being with Marty Booker and Chris Chambers and those guys, you know, very talented guys, you know, great hands, great route running ability, like all that stuff, speed, all that stuff. Like they're, it was a lot of fun being around all those guys and just seeing the way that they work and all those things. But, you know, like I said, early on, it was tough. We were struggling that first year. You know, for me at the time, it was just, you know, I'm just trying to do my job at the time, trying to keep my job, trying to grow, trying to get better and different things like that. And just trying to learn and, you know, being around guys like Zach and Junior and watching what they do to be a pro and how much time Zach spent there. I was like, what's he doing? Like, I just kind of like watching and just kind of paying attention. Like, you always kind of pay attention, like the guys that do it the right way. And you're kind of like taking notes and like, all right, Junior and Zach, they get every Friday after practice, they get IVs. So I'm like, all right, cool. I'm getting IVs. You know, IV, like, right? Like, hey, you know, like I'm, they probably didn't know I was in there, like, but I was watching and studying and seeing like, you know, all the different things that different guys do and how to play a long time and, you know, trying to figure all that stuff out. But, you know, having guys like that is invaluable to your organization of just helping along the, you know, young guys like myself of just trying to watch guys that do it the right way. And like you sit there and say like, okay, I want to play for a long time too. Like, what are they doing? So, you know, having guys like that was crucial for me, you know, early on in my career.
You know, and you mentioned some names right there. I can't imagine. And you talk about how we struggled. Seth said it as well. I mean, I got you and Book and Chambers at wideout. You know, I got Zach and Junior at linebacker on the other side, man. That team should have performed a little bit better than it did, right?
100%, man. It was a very talented team, especially the front seven on defense was so good. And then, you know, we had Sam Madison, Patrick Tane. Like, I mean, the defense was crazy. Really legit, you know, it really was. Offensively, you know, we were a little young and different things like that. But yeah, it was funny in that, like, we're sitting there and I remember Dave came over and he's usually on the defensive side, but we're running like a fake reverse screen to the halfback. So fake it to the halfback, fake the reverse. All right. And then we're throwing a screen. And so he brought everybody up and he's like, all right, now on this play, I want everybody to yell reverse. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's like the key part to the play. Like, I'm just like, oh man, we're in trouble. I don't know if that's gonna work.
My flag football team at
I just kind of go, man, like,
oh my tough deal.
That was the one. Well, he learned a lot from those guys, Deuce. He mentioned that. He didn't even mention JT. He talked about that front seven. And so at that point I had left, I was working with JT. And so this is an off the field lesson that Wes learned. And now remember, this is before Wes became Wes friggin' Welker, right? And we got an offer, and this is a great one, especially for me, a nice Jewish boy. We got a bar mitzvah offer for JT and Zach. You know where I'm going with this one. And it was down on the beach at like the Intercontinental. I don't know who the guy was who was footing the bill for this, Juice, but it was like a fucking Super Bowl party. Like, we, you know, and the money that they offered was big, and they had an extra like $5,000 and said, who else can we get? I said, well, we're starting to do some stuff with Wes Welker. All right, cool. Have Wes come along. We show up, Juice, and I'm telling you, it was a Super Bowl party, the whole like upper level of the Intercontinental. And they, now Wes knows better than the three of us because we haven't been there, but like a media day for the Super Bowl, right? They had the there and the whole thing. You remember that?
He definitely learned from those guys how to make it. Like, okay, after you take pictures with, you know, Zach, JT, and Wes, and, you know, sign whatever, go into the next room because Snoop Dogg's going to be playing. Right. You know, and it's just like, okay, do it. Does that mean I have to leave? can I stay for Snoop Dogg? Like, what's going on here? Like,
you bring your green hat.
It was just like, that was like nothing I've ever seen.
It was outrageous. But then at the end, the best part, again, you know, when you look at the career Wes went on to have, and it breaks our heart here in South Florida that it wasn't with the Dolphins. But when you look at the career that Wes went on to have, you think about that he was there. And so, you know, JT then JT does the move at the valet where the car, and I don't know what he was driving at that point, the Bentley or whatever. And it's parked right up front. So they don't even have to go get it. They just hand him the keys. And then Zach has the Hummer, comes around or whatever. And then Wes, you know, I pull out the envelope, I hand him the cash. Wes pulls the envelope back out. He peels off a little bit for my time, hands it to me, and he starts walking. I go, "Are you getting your car?" He goes, "No, I'm good." And he just goes walking off into the sunset down on Miami Beach. Yeah. Where you went, Wes? But I know what you had in your pocket. And
yeah, there's no telling where I went after that one. Sure was a hell of a night, though.
I can only imagine. But yeah, so you learned a lot from those guys in Miami.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. Absolutely. No, I've been those veterans, like, you know, especially like Zach and Junior, and those, like, it was just constantly football for them, you know, constantly, you know, especially Zach, man. I mean, the amount of time that guy spent there at the facility was, it was unbelievable. Like, you would stay there longer than the coaches a lot of times, and just, you know, finding really little keys and taking notes. Like, I was like, It was pretty impressive.
Did you, you know, as a guy on the offensive side of the ball, were you ever kind of tapping into that knowledge? Did that help you? You know, because it's interesting to hear how much you watched him. Obviously, he's playing not just a different position, but on the other side of the ball. But were you able to utilize that for your prep?
Absolutely. Like, it, you know, especially as a young player, it's like you almost have to. No one really teaches you what you're looking for, you know, and so you're kind of like you kind of. All right, I'm watching football. What am I really looking for here? What am I, like, I don't. And so you start to develop, like, over time of, like, and really I liked watching the individual person that I'm going against.
Correct.
You know, like, I want to know, like, all right, is he fast? Is he physical? Like, what type of game do I need to play against this guy? You know, is it going to be like, okay, I'll use my quickness, or is this guy kind of soft and like, I'm going to go butt him up early and like try and back him off me a little bit and, you know, see if he folds, or, you know, there's just like different things that you try to figure out about that person and being like, okay, how do I take care of this guy and really dominate him and different things like that. And then from there, like, you could start getting to like coverages and how they do it and stuff like that. I didn't really mess with that as much because I didn't want to go into the play like thinking one thing. I wanted to be able to react. I wanted to be able to see, like, you know, all right, safety's coming down, different things like that. See the shell of the defense, you know, because you never know. You start getting game plan teams and different things like that. You can kind of screw yourself with some of that. But I really wanted to know about the individual I was going against.
Yeah, and I think that's so important, Wes. And people, you know, you look at football, it's 11-on-11, but it's really 11 one-on-one matches. You know,
no doubt.
Especially for us at wide receiver. And I always thought, as a wide receiver too, there's always a couple pair of eyes that are looking at you. Not only the guy that's guarding you, but you got to look where his help is going to be too. And that's how you killed it on the inside with stuff like that too, man. Because outside, I thought it was a lot easier than inside. Because usually outside, you got the one-on-one. But inside, there's, you never know if it's a linebacker that's got you on an I&O. You got a safety might be coming that's helping. It was always tough. And you talk about stuff like that. Is that what you part of your film study with every player that you're playing against, that gave you that edge, knowing where their help was coming from, what they're trying to take away from you, but you, because you excelled at that. And that must have came from you know, learning that and studying that one-on-one opportunity.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, you look at, like, outside the numbers, like, to me, that's like more of like a grown man's game. Like, it's like, all right, the freaks are out there and they're running go balls and slants and like winning one-on-one and different things like that. The slot, it becomes different because there's more people. There's more things that can happen. There's people closer to the ball. The nickel blitz is safety coming down, or is it a linebacker shooting out to me? Like, and you start to learn, like, okay, also a nickel blitz is like, I know I'm running. I'm basically one-on-one with the safety if he comes down to me. If he goes over the top, like, I know the guy's coming from inside, so somebody's, I'm going to run at him. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, it's there's so many little, and really there's only probably like a handful, you know, 5 to 10 different things that can really happen to you. And once you start to notice all that stuff, and like, now it's like, bam, bam, okay. And I used to sit there and write down like all my routes, like, sit there, all right, this coverage is what I'm doing. This coverage is what I'm doing, you know, and I'd write it out over and over and over and over again. And it's kind of like just stealing reps for myself of, like, that's, you know, awesome. Talking myself through every single different scenario that could possibly happen on this route. So now, like, I had it so ingrained in my head that it's just now a reaction. Yeah. And now it's like, all right, my plan, I already know what my plan is. Now I just got to go execute and see what it is.
How much fun is that, though, when you see it like come to fruition, that you sat there and you studied, wrote it down, and then it happens in the game and boom, you react and something great happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's the best. Yeah. Like that's why you prepare for it. And like it's so cool. And especially when you have like a guy like Tom that just sees the field the same way you do. And so it's like, and you talk through it and it's like, all right, against this coverage is what I'm doing. And he's like, all right, cool. I'll know you'll be right here. You know, like against this coverage, I'm doing it. Like, all right, no problem. You know, after every period, we'd sit there and go over and talk. Hey, what'd you think on this play? What'd you think? Like, it was just a constant conversation at all times of, you know, trying to fix the problem ourselves.
And that's the point I want to talk about too. Cause we all know, obviously we all know what happened down here in 2006. And hell, you know, it's one of those things that the Dolphin fans will never forget. You know, you're a restricted free agent. The Patriots want you, obviously, in a bad, bad way. The fans trade you for a second and a seventh. I don't see any that's amazing stuff. And that tells you how good you were here and how bad the Patriots wanted you as well. And then the rest, of course, is history. What was going through your head when all this was going down, man? You know, getting traded, not getting re-signed with us, getting the, you know, and obviously the two picks that New England gave up for you, that tells you how they valued you as well.
No, I mean, it was like the first time ever that I was actually wanted, you know? So it was a very cool deal for me, you know, especially going to New England and like, I'm like, all right, finally somebody did their homework, you know, or, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, good. Like, and I knew, you know, watching Troy Brown and their system and everything like that, I was like, oh, this is going to be like perfect for me. You know, they're an 11 personnel lot, you know, it was, and really I think about it even now and like even evaluating guys, like I personally feel like I hit the deal at the perfect time. You know, it's like, you know, they're still playing base personnel to 11 on first and second. Right. Like, it's like, you know, now it's like, you know, a nickel in this league is a starter. So yeah. It's like the guy's like, he's a big deal now. So it's, you know, you see guys are just, they're better at that position. And so like I was going against linebackers or the third best corner a lot of times, and so you know it's
alive.
It's kind of crazy to see how it's kind of changed.
Yeah,
and now it's like it's almost like you need three really big physical good like freaks out there on the field if you're going to be an 11 personnel like that all the time.
You know, and that's so funny you say that, Wes, because I remember when I started eating up these, you know, third or fourth string, yeah, you know, corners or the linebacker, they started bringing their number ones inside. I saw Ty Law in the slot instead of him being outside, which our game plan kind of messed up our whole damn game plan. Now, if you're going to bring now I got to deal with Ty's ass in here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let me get this guy that is brought off the street. Let me eat off. Right. Let me eat off of him for a little while. You know what I mean?
Right.
The same thing I'm sure happened to you where, you know, you weren't getting that third guy. You were getting one of the one or twos that were coming inside now because, you know, it's disastrous to put a linebacker or the, you know, guy with the practice squad or third guy on you in the slot.
And that's why, like, you know, they'd move, you know, but they'd move like Revis, different people like that or whatever. But a lot of these number one corners, like, they're scared to go inside.
They can't play inside.
They can't do it, you know. Like,
ain't,
I mean,
for everybody. That's what they say.
I'm telling you, see a lot of even now, like, you just see that they're out of place. They feel like they're not comfortable there. And it is. It's a different position. So it's, you know, you see guys that are number one corners that, you know, they really struggle to play in the slot.
Yeah, I was talking to Big Seth a little bit about that slot, man, and how you changed. I thought that, you know, I took it to one level, I thought, but you took it to a whole different level. And talk about a little bit about being in the slot.
You did a hell of, like, you set the tone, man. There's no question about it, dude. Your hands and your toughness and how you played, shoot, man.
That's how you played, though.
That's why I respect the hell out of you.
Bro, you that's know? How you
and
played,
that's why,
man.
I loved watching it.
And route running, man, your quickness in the slot and the box. I call it the quickness in the box was unbelievable, bro. And it was so much fun to watch. And when we lost you, man, that really honestly pissed me off, man. Being the fan that I was of yours and the Dolphins, man, that really pissed me off.
Pissed a lot then, of course, people off, Juice.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you go on and dominate us some more. You know what I mean? When you're playing against us in New England and, you know, shit. Right. So, bro, I just mad respect for what you did on the field, man. But the way you chewed those dudes up in the slot, man, it was so much fun to watch. It's like artwork out there for me, bro.
I appreciate it, man. I do. It's been quite a ride, but shoot, you know, guys like you really kind of set the tone and paved the way for guys like me. There's no question about it.
Appreciate that, man.
I almost hate to break up this moment here because it's kind of beautiful right now.
Wide out.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go off script a little bit, and I'm going to get to the question that I want to ask. But as Juice is talking about being pissed off, and certainly, you know, revisionist history when people look back, how the hell did we ever get rid of Wes Welker? And as you said, some people did their homework and they saw the potential. And I say potential, you were actualizing, you were making a ton of plays on a team that wasn't really that great offensively. Second and a seventh was pretty good compensation for a player at your position at that time. Juice and I went and looked it back. JT, a year after he won Defensive Player of the Year, got traded for a second and a sixth to Washington. So, I mean, the Patriots they clearly had a vision for you. But the thing that I didn't realize, and someone pointed out to me, and you may not want to get into this, being that you're in the coaching profession, and that's okay. So Cam Cameron had taken over as the head coach, right? And he was the offensive coordinator in San Diego when you were let go there.
Right.
The fuck was he missing, man? Like, what? I mean, you don't want to.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's actually kind of funny because years later, he was the offense coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens. Yeah. And I go to the Pro Bowl. And they're coaching the Pro Bowl.
Oh, they trying to cut you from the Pro Bowl team? Like, come on.
And so, anyways,
trade him to the National.
I sat there and we were doing a walkthrough. All right, Hail Mary. And anyways, they're like, "Oh, get Wes out." So he pulls me out.
Come on,
you know, to walk through, you know, which I don't. I get it, and I don't care, or whatever. And I was like, "Well, damn, you." That's the third time now. You think you'd learn your lesson at some point. You know?
Oh, right.
Just like the coaches were over there dialed, the players were dying.
That's hilarious.
It was pretty good.
That's crazy.
Well, didn't learn his lesson.
This could go a whole other route. We won't do that to you because you've been great and respectful here.
No.
I'm going to say, you know, not the first thing he got wrong and not the last thing he got wrong. Golly. So look, you do sign with New England. Clearly, for all kinds of reasons, it made a lot of sense for you. We know that you just rewrote the friggin' record books when you got there, and the team did in that first year, 18-1, and blah, 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 blah. We could talk a lot about that. Clearly, that season, going 16-0 in the regular season, drew a lot of attention, not just nationally, but here in South Florida for obvious reasons. 17-0 Dolphins. Mercury Morris always had plenty to say. But this leads me to a story because we did do our research and there was no way we weren't going to call one of our favorites here in the tank and Larry Izzo. So we called Izzo and Izzo told us a story. I go, give me something to talk about with Wes. And he said, well, Wes and I used to drive into work together. And you know exactly where I'm going with it.
Oh, yeah.
So Juice, Wes, Izzo tells a story. And he leaves me these voice messages, by the way. So it's great. Right. You know, it's like it's like some mob voice message.
10 minutes long.
So you get them too. So he left me. But it was perfect setup for this. And I guess he had an interview with Joe Rose because Izzo, obviously, you know, a great career down here in Miami as well. Right. And he called our good friend Joe Rose and he was doing an interview and he must have said something about Mercury Morris or what have you. And then you decided that you were going to have a little fun with Iz after that.
Yeah, so I think he said, like you know, Mercury Morris was saying all this stuff, and, like, you know, and Larry gets very, like, nervous about these interview type deals. Like, it's like,
I
don't want to say anything wrong. I don't want to, you know, like, he's like, you know, the team's in a good place. I don't want to be that guy. Like, he's just very, and he's like, well, they start talking about Mercury saying what he's saying and all this stuff and whatever. And it was just like, oh, and so Larry's just kind of going on a deal or whatever. And anyways, he hangs up and he looks at me. He's like, how do you think that went? I was like, and he's like, the Mercury Moore deal. And I was like, yeah. He's like, that's why I hate doing this. I don't want to do these anymore. Oh, I hate doing these things. Da, da, da. So, anyways, we get in, and I'm telling, like, Vrabel and Brewski and Tom and all the guys about it or whatever. And so Tom and we came up with a deal of, like, we should tell Bill after practice to sit there and say something to Izzo. and tell them, you know, shut the hell up, you know, quit running your mouth and stuff. So anyways, Tom goes and tells Bill while we're stretching, and Bill's just over there snickering. Like, he's like, okay, yeah, I got it. And so anyways, he called the whole group up, and like, and he's like, can we just shut the hell up about the Miami Dolphins, Izzo? And Izzo's just like, oh man. And then he goes up to Bill and he's like, Bill, I'm so sorry. And Bill's like, every fucking time. Like, and so anyways, we're on the way home and everything like that. We tell Zach about it. So Zach's like, dude, love what you said about Mercury.
Oh, Zach, I knew
down here. And so Larry's like, is it really not? And it wasn't. Like, nobody had picked it up yet or whatever. And so anyways, he was freaking out the whole time, like sitting there Googling, like listening to the radio. And then they said the name Mercury Morse, but it had nothing to do with Izzo. And he's like freaking out in the car. Like, it was quite a day.
That's outstanding.
And, you know, Iz came on here and said he spent, you know, his entire, whatever it was, 16-year career every day thinking he was going to get cut. Like, he was that guy.
Oh.
I can only imagine what that day was like for him.
Oh, my goodness. Seriously, through training camp, he did, like, every single day he'd go through the numbers. Well, we're going to keep him, and we're going to keep him, and we're going to keep it. So, I'm out. This is it, you know.
For his entire career. So then, Juice, he also said, so I taught, you know, the tail end of the 10-minute message was that I guess he started texting all the guys because he was trying to find it on the internet, and he starts apologizing to all the team leaders that he feels down, and the team had all this momentum. And I guess Tom finally, like, just felt badly for him and let him off the hook. But he saw check the next day and walked by and said, ah, you got me good. And Bill looked at him and said, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. And
No doubt.
Carried out the joke.
I know. That's classic. Oh, it was.
You know what I love about that, man? I really love the fact that, you know, we're seeing a part of or a side of Bill Belichick that we would never imagine, because we only see the one side that we get. But the fact that he was in on that, and the guys are loving it, and, you know, in a successful season, That's outstanding stuff right there, man. And I think that's why you got guys go out there and play so well and so hard for a coach like that, because he might be one way, you know, on TV or media, but I'm sure he's such a great coach in person. Like,
yeah. Well, to tell you the truth, we were all nervous to go tell him to do that, you know? And so Tom was the only one.
Right. You got the right guy. You got the right guy.
Like, Tom, you go tell him. We're all sitting there like, oh, you tell him. No, I ain't telling him. You go tell him.
You get the head man in. You got a pretty good gag going.
All right.
That's outstanding, man.
That's great.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about Tom. You know, I had the honor of playing with Danny, you know, down here in Marino for 7 years. And you obviously, you miss Danny down here, but you end up playing 6 seasons with Tom and a couple more with Peyton Manning, man. Talk about that, man. Playing receiver with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks right there.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like I said, like it's the most important position on the field. Like, I mean, and being around those guys, I tell you the one thing they did such a great job of is keeping everybody in that organization, from coaches to other players to like kept everybody accountable. Like, everybody was so accountable to whatever their role was. And if they weren't, you know, pulling their weight on it, trainers, anybody, like, they let them know, like, in different ways. But, you know, they would definitely, you know, Tom would more let his frustrations out on game day and different stuff like that, different things like that. But Peyton was like, you know, I mean, I see him yell at offensive line coaches like, we're not blocking this like that. What are we? Are you kidding me? Like, I'm just in that. Oh,
I love it.
You know, but it was really good though, because it kept everybody like on edge, and coaches included. And, you know, when you got guys like that are really, you know, leading the organization, then like that's when you got something special. And, you know, it's guys that really understand the game and what they want to do out there.
Yeah, I call that the most important position in any sport.
All of sports. I agree with you.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
You live or die by that position in this league.
And you sit there and you listen to some of these play calls and everything like that. It's like, how do they even know who's doing what? All this. Right. I'm like, you know, you're just, I'm just trying to get one guy to learn one spot and be able to do what he needs to do.
Stay in the game, apparently.
I'm like, this dude's got to worry about motions and, you know, cadence and this and steps and whatever.
Hey, Wes, that's why they make the big bucks, though, right?
Hey, man, hey, they got to earn it.
They earn it, right?
They definitely earn it.
But it's interesting to hear what you said, though, because I think the easy thing, the low-hanging fruit that all of us see is the play. We see them making, you know, the tough throws or the comebacks at the toughest times. But that accountability, you know, we don't, if you're not there, you're not living it, you don't see that. So it's, I think that's fascinating to hear what you said, that both of those guys, that's the big similarity that sucks at you, is that they
leaders, man. They're true leaders, right, bro. Yeah.
But not just no with doubt. The players, that if they're holding coaches,
you need the whole organization.
No doubt.
That's a winning mindset. That is fascinating. Look, Peyton's going into the Hall of Fame this year. Right. And first ballot guy, they're going to build a whole wing in Canton for Tom Brady when it's his, you know, time. And who knows, he may not retire for another 5 or 6 years. Insanity he's got going on over there. But when I look at your career, you know, okay, that's great about those guys. And you were fortunate to play with those two guys. But when I look at the career of Wes Welker, and we joked about the production in high school and the kicking the field goals, 15 NFL records, I think currently still he holds, Juice. Five seasons of 110 or more receptions. Two of them with 120 or more receptions. 17,000 all-purpose yards, and we're not a big stats show. But when I look at that, my question is Wes Welker a Hall of Famer?
No.
Absolutely. No. Well, stop it, Wes. No. Man, we already had this conversation. Cool, I knew you were going to say that.
There's too many guys that are not in, that are like – It's not even close. Like it's like there's too many guys that are still like not in that totally deserve to be in. I can't even remember the names or whatever, but like, you know, they're, you know, I only think is Torrey Holton, Isaac Bruce.
Why would they be ahead of you?
But Isaac's it, right?
Did Isaac get in?
I might have got in.
I stopped paying attention.
Until you drew, like, I don't care. Like, would it be awesome? And would it be like everything like that? But it's not like, you know, it's the end all be all for me. You know, it'd be a great honor. And I'm sure if it happened, it'd be like way cooler than what I even realized or anything. But I'm also not getting my hopes up on it. Like, I'm good. I got coaching job and, you know, three kids and, you know, life's good.
Oh man, that humility, man. I love it, man. So we'll do it for you, Wes. We'll, you know, we'll advertise.
Please don't.
Promote for you, bro. Because I'm going to tell you what, man. I mean, it's all about production. We talked about this a couple of times on the show. It's all about production, success, you know, longevity. You've got all that stuff. You know what I mean? Oh, sorry, it's my dog. So I mean, I tell you, man, I don't know why you feel that way, but you know, we'll talk about it. You can just relax on it, you know what I mean? But no doubt about it, man. There's definitely those numbers are Hall of Fame worthy, without a doubt, with the success you had on the field. And you know what I mean? And that's part of it all too. We got a lot of guys that, you know, have great numbers, but their teams weren't very good or they weren't right. When you have all that combined, man, that's Hall of Fame worthy stuff, bro.
Yeah. Well, you should be in the conversation,
Wes. You should be in the conversation. And again, you're saying, when I say saying all the right things, it's clearly very genuine. But I wonder how much of you being so quick to say no, so quick to say there's so many other guys, how much of that is still you being the guy that couldn't get the scholarship offer or had to fight to make two teams your rookie year? Like, how much of that shit are you still carrying on your shoulders and forgetting the fact that you did all of these things that you did? And I'm not asking you to brag on yourself. I'm just wondering if you don't even see your bronze bust in Canton because you're like, these fuckers didn't even want to recruit me.
I mean, I guess coming from where I came from, I was very happy. Like when I first came in the league, I just wanted to play a few years. Like if I can stick around for a few years, get a little head on life, whatever, like all this stuff. I had no dreams of like sitting there to go to the Hall of Fame or anything like that. My expectations really weren't that at the time. Like it was just, you know, I was trying to make a team. I was trying to keep a job. I was trying to make a living. And anyways, like it was just kind of like stacking dates. And so year one, stacking days, you know, my first 2 years, I played with bone spurs in my heels. And so I was afraid to tell anybody because I thought I'd get cut. And so
that's so painful too, bro. How'd you do that? Especially winter routes. I had both of mine done. Oh my God. Bro.
And that's why the third year was so much better for me because I wasn't having to deal with, you know, the bone spurs that were in there. I finally, after my second year, I felt comfortable enough to sit there and say, oh, hey, I need surgery. Mm-hmm. And then that's when they drafted a guy in the third round, Derek Hagan. They were going to, you know, get him to beat me out.
Always, like, right?
Dang, all right. Well, at least my ankle's healthy. Like, I ain't letting this dude beat me out. Like, so it's just, I don't know. They're just from where I came from. And like, I had no expectations for that, I guess. So I don't sit there and say like, no, I should be, or, you know, it was never really my expectation to really be able to have a chance to do that. So, you know, I'm just happy to be in the conversation. And, you know, if it did happen, I'm sure it'd be like a much different feeling. I'd be like, oh, I'm so happy this happened, you know, but
sure.
At the same time, it's, things are good. So I'm not too worried about it.
Wes, how many times do they try to bring people in to replace you, man? I heard that story a lot of times about me. It's like, seems like, you know, we got to get somebody else in here and they can never obviously beat you out, man. And that's a tribute to, you know, your hard work and your production and the team player that you are, man, and getting it done, man, doing your job, you know?
Yeah.
They always try to bring somebody in, don't they?
No doubt, man. And really the main thing was, like, because he was more talented and everything, it was just the consistency.
Yeah.
It was like, I was so much more consistent and just being able to play in, play out. And then he'd have his flash plays and like coaches get all excited and everything like that. And then, you know, it's football, you know, and that's always the hardest thing. And, you know, yeah, this guy flashes and everything like that, but can he consistently like play at a high level for us? Is he going to grade out
16 games like that? I need 16 games of consistency. Right. And, you know, obviously, you know, that was something that didn't work out for us because you held that position down and Hagan, no disrespect to him, didn't make it very long in this league. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean,
it's, he ended up playing, I think, 8 or 9 years or something.
Yeah, but it was
he
like
bounced around quite a bit.
Right, right, right. And good for him for that. That's it. If you can get that much time in, it's outstanding as well, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, look, you are in the conversation, Wes. You don't have to be a part of the conversation, but you are.
All right, good. Yeah.
I think I could be wrong, but this season might be your first year of eligibility.
I think it was last year.
Okay.
It was last year's first
so,
year, yeah.
So we'll watch and we'll see. But if and Juice and I would say when, but if and when it does happen, we'll have to get back in touch with you to see. You know.
Oh, we're going to Canada too. We need an invite, man.
Yeah.
We need an invite.
Yeah.
He's gonna have a lot of folks probably ahead of me.
You look like that bar mitzvah we went to. Don't you worry about that.
I love it. Well, Wes, I don't want to take you away from your family any more than we could have. Your son's probably banging on the door.
No.
And I know you're
he's
on the
all
last
good.
Break before the draft starts and your football season starts as well. So really, really nice of you to spend a little time here.
No, I'm glad we were finally able to get together on this. Sorry it took so long on this. Apologies on that.
It's great. This is great, Wes, man. Wide out. You know how we roll, man.
Yeah, no doubt. It's always good to see you, man. Seth, thank you all so much. Really appreciate y'all having me on, man.
Hey, Wes, thanks for diving in, brother.
Absolutely. No, thank you guys. You guys are the best.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when you dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude,
okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie,
Bringing up stars we never heard to the public. Bet we love it. Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rapping with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank. Dog fans were at a talk, we about to dive up in that fish tank.